This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil? The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. As usual with me in studio, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz.
Good morning, Wally. How are you?
I'm doing good. And also joining us in studio this morning, former Raptors coach, Butch Carter. Good morning, Butch. How are you?
Good morning.
Guys, ready to go?
Ready to go.
Anyways, just on a side note, if anybody hasn't watched the Avengers Endgame movie, 3 hours of nonstop action. Best $15 I spent in a long time. Anyways, let's move on to more important topics. Butch, we'll cut right to the chase. Raptors have not looked good the last two games. What happened? Last Sunday, I sat in this chair, and probably given the pronouncements I made last Sunday, displayed perhaps obviously my lack of basketball knowledge to the same extent as yours, and said the Raptors had played I think the terminology I used after winning five in a row and blowing out the Sixers in game one, they had elevated their game to a level I had never seen a Raptors team play before. We were all excited. We all were getting our chairs ready on Bay Street for the parade. And wow, man, it in 1 week we've been brought back to earth with a resounding thud. There's a lot to analyze here, Butch. What happened?
Well, I mean, let's go. They finished the season with the second best record in the East. That means they've shown they have a strong ability, at least against the Western teams, to go and win road games. They are a very good team when they play well. Do they have the ability to win one game? Absolutely. The issue for them is you have three players that are having catastrophic failure in making shots. So Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry, and Serge Ibaka. They are very poor. Serge shot 51% during the season. He is 6 for 20 and no rhythm. Worst in the man-to-man matchup, Embiid. When Serge finds himself on Embiid, he's going for shot fakes. He shouldn't be going for shot fakes. And Embiid is imposing his will. And I think it's a personal game. You have a unique thing in the NBA. You have three players on the floor that originated for life from Africa, Ibaka. And Serge is not playing to the standard in which I thought he should play at. Like I said, I did not like the trade for Serge's sake. You know, I've been very critical of Serge and his issues around his temper and the incidents he's been involved in. But he has shown that he can make the 15, 18-foot shot given the opportunity.
Naz, I want to bring you in at this point. Raptors go down. This seems to be I'll turn it over to both of you guys, but Naz, chime in first. The Raptors, the game's at 3:30 this afternoon. It's in Philadelphia. Raptors are down one. If the Raptors lose today, they're down 3-1. What are the prospects of them coming back?
11 teams. There's only been 11 teams that have gotten back from a 3-1 deficit in series.
In NBA history.
Yes.
So, you know, the odds would get stacked against them. And then
they look undersized to me, Butch. What do you think?
All of a sudden,
they look undersized.
Yeah, but the issue is they should have built the flexibility in during the season. They never played the two centers together, right? Because it's all about You know, you make your adjustments and your counters. So, you know, I still say that this team is being more run by the president, Masai, than the coaching staff. He had a chance to hire Budenholzer, and Budenholzer goes to Milwaukee. He hires a coach that has the same management team. The same management team that has Masai has Nick Nurse. And Nick suffers clearly when he is behind. There is nothing that's dynamic that comes out of timeouts. He has not made the personnel adjustments. This is the same thing we saw in Cleveland last year. And they said, well, we're going to get rid of DeRozan to help cure it. But these games that they're losing aren't close. You know, you guys know historically, I've said win the first and third quarter. You go into Philly and they are bombing you and not using all of his timeouts. Because the analytics will show you during the course of the season across the league what teams can come back from. And you can look at the numbers for winning teams. And they just have not been able to come back on Philly.
Butch, let me ask you. We have these discussions when the Leafs play and they lose an important game, and you know, game two was the game I thought the Raptors should have won. It was a horrendous shooting performance, except for obviously Kawhi. Do we get overexcited by the fact that they just got blown out in one game, and that becomes, you know, you got blown out where we can't turn this around. We find every weakness in the team. We microanalyze every weakness. It could have been just a bad game. Are you seeing something different here?
Well, the issue at the end of the day, if it's the Leafs or the Raptors, the bottom line is, are they tough enough?
Are they? Because
outside of two players, they have not shown to be smart.
What does toughness mean in basketball? I mean, we know what it means in football. We know what it means in hockey. Basketball, you don't really – are we talking about mental toughness? Are we talking about effort? Are we talking about intensity or just plain fact, big, muscular toughness?
No, we're talking about mental quickness and toughness on the defensive side. All right? They have allowed themselves to go into Philadelphia – all right, and it's a national theme on the Toronto Raptors. All right, historically, Paul Pierce started it when he said Toronto just doesn't have the it. All right, and the it is, as I've told you guys, you can be the smartest coach in the world. When it's time, when it's playoff time, championship time, your team has to stand up in that locker room and want to beat that other team in a manner in which they will do anything to get them stopped. The Raptors have never reached the point where they will do anything to defensively get a team stopped in the playoffs. And it has shown over and over again over the last 6 years. They are not tough enough.
But, Butch, and don't get me wrong, I don't disagree with you. But this Raptors team is dramatically different than the one we had last year, except you know where I'm going to end up going with this one.
Yep.
Okay. We supposedly were supposed to overcome these problems with some of the talent that came in. Kawhi, Danny Green, Gasol, Siakam has become an emergent star. This team is fundamentally different than the team from the year before, except for one.
Well.
Okay. The $33 million man. And 31, not 30, that
31.4 of Hoos County.
Hoos County, thanks. Is that okay? Hold on, 31.4 U.S. Right?
Yes.
Okay, so 34, so 33 million dollars. If I do the exchange, we're up into the mid 30s. Anyways, I don't know if that's the point or, but it to a certain extent, it is the point. You're making that kind of dough. There's certain expectations. Well, of course, I'm talking about Kyle Lowry. He's been the subject this week. Certainly if you follow Twitter and what I call the Twitter mob, Man, the vitriol against Kyle Lowry is beyond belief. Be quite frank, I think we can reasonably criticize him. There's no question. When you're making that kind of dough, and you know you are supposed to be the leader on the team, and you're supposed to be the go-to guy, and you're supposed to be the guy who takes his game to a different level in the playoffs. On that note, Butch, we're going to go to break. And then,
oh, man.
he's just getting into it.
On that note, we're going to go to break so we can allow you an opportunity to collect your thoughts. And when we come back from the break, Butch Carter is going to address the subject of Kyle Lowry. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we received this letter. My marriage is in a rut. Can you help us spice things up? Yes. Get the gourmet special. Two medium gourmet pizzas for just $24.99. He loves Canadian bacon, so he'll order a deluxe. She can order the Italian, because she loves the hot Italian sausage. Everyone's happy.
Pizzaville stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steels Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steels Paint, 4190 Steels Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity in Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in two words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto on the new AM 740. If you're listening in downtown Toronto, we're also on 96.7 FM. Live video streaming, www.zoomerradio.ca. In the house today, former Raptors coach Butch Carter. Later on in the hour, we'll be talking to Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer Carmen and Marcantonio, who's going to bring us up to date on all things soccer. Just before we went to break, Butch, I left you with something to contemplate, which I'm sure you've given a lot of thought to. We chatted about it just before we went on air. The singular Raptor that is coming under the most criticism, for what's happening in this series and, got severely criticized for what happened, I think, in game one against the Magic. I think, was that the game, Naz, where you didn't get any points at all?
Zero.
Zero. Kyle Lowry, the other night, I think he only got 7 points. Butch. Tell us your analysis.
This has been a consistent pattern. You have a 5-year all-star. Last 5 year, Kyle has been an all-star, either as a starter or as a reserve. And he is in the lower 20% of players who have gone into the playoffs and their stats, have reduced to a bucket margin of what they did during the regular season. So, you have to question, you know.
Tell us, you know what, Butch, the one thing, you know, I you know, obviously the one thing I highly respect about you is your grasp of obviously the nuances of the game, and but you are a big stats analytics guy, and you've astounded me over the years. The times you've had us on the show, and 1 year you know the Raptors were on top of the world in February, and you came in with a bunch of stats, defensive stats, and said, guys, relax. This Raptors team's not as good as everybody thinks they are. And you pulled out a whole bunch of defensive stats. And as we went, I think it was 2 years ago, and as we got closer to the playoffs, everything you said on the air came true statistics-wise. You're talking about stats. You've got some charts in front of you as I'm looking at you in studio now. Tell us what you find in the analytics, in the stats that you find concerning about Lowry, specific ones.
2 for 14 from the three-point line. All right. If you take that with...
is this a playoff stat?
This is a playoff stat.
In the Philadelphia series?
This is the playoff stat.
Lowry's 2 for 13?
Yeah, he's
from the free-throw line or three-point?
Three-point line. He's 2 for 14. And Fred VanVleet is 0 for 7. All right.
That guy's throwing bricks, man.
So
right now.
So it's really scary when, if you say analytically, we need to take threes and make them, and that would open up everything else, because this is what happens. A good player, all-star player, starts making shots. Then all of a sudden, the officials will give him a call or two. The officials know that Kyle Lowry, they're getting the post-game notes. They're getting their pre-game notes. They know that he is struggling, and they're not going to bail him out. You know, we've watched games. They don't bail out James Harden. Why would you bail out Kyle Lowry? He's in Philadelphia. Historically, he's played well when he's gone home. Right now, he is stinking it up. And it is alarming that Kyle Lowry has been kept here. They said the problem was DeRozan. The problem has been a combination of both of them in the playoffs. They are not superior defensively, and Kyle gets a lot of charges, which I give him credit for during the season and sacrificing his body. But during the playoffs, different kind of animal coming at you. He is less effective. And are they able to win a game? Yes, they are able to win one game, but I see it being very hard if Kyle Lowry doesn't play better.
You know what's disturbing is that Kawhi Leonard has played great, and they're not good enough. Correct. Somebody had told me going into the series that Kawhi would be playing like that, I'd say we would win in 5 games.
Yeah, but the problem you have is Embiid has dominated the 5 position, right? Almost as if they're scared of him. Embiid is able to stay at his own pace. The Raptors dominated Philly in the regular season because Valasciunas bullied Embiid, and Embiid got no calls. Now you move Valasciunas, and Embiid is going to the basket like he's Michael Jordan, and he's not. But he's being allowed to, because when you put a body on him the way Valasciunas did, it impeded him from running around acting like he's an airplane. That's his after dunk.
But isn't this just a Game 3 phenomenon? Didn't Gasol handle him significantly better in Game 1 and Game 2? And it's just like, once again, going back to the same point, are we overreacting to what happened in that just in Game 3?
Well, you may be overreacting, but I'm saying that Lowry's been inconsistent going into...
No, I'm talking about Gasol now.
All right.
Lowry's endured this criticism during his entire... career in Toronto.
You know what's disturbing about Lowry? They're down 7 points or 6 points, and the next shot, get him closer, he never makes it.
Yeah.
Takes
yeah.
a 3-point shot, never makes it.
Well, I mean, look.
The Gasol Embiid, we'll go back. I want your perception of that. Embiid got the better of him, quite frankly, significantly in game 3. I thought Gasol got the better of Embiid in game 1 and 2. Did you see something in game 3 in that matchup that, you know, Gasol's days of controlling Embiid are now finished?
Well, the reality is that Gasol has ended up getting a lot of tic-tac fouls instead of hard fouls. Right? I told you when they made the trade, they took a tremendous risk in trading Valasciunas for Gasol from the standpoint, older player. Look, it's ISO for Kawhi. So why do you have to have a five that's supposed to be this great passer? Gasol's value is that he has to make shots.
And if, he's not doing that.
If he makes shots, now Kawhi can run underneath, all right? And that has not happened. And I said this from the start. His only value is guys make – he has to make – you have to make shots and guard your guy. And, yes, he's a great help side guy. But the problem you have with the team is because both media companies own the teams, they can put, they keep putting out a softer perception of what's going on. And they've done that because that helps them sell tickets, that helps them sell advertisers. But at the end of the day, there's a certain toughness that is lacking. And that purity of toughness shows in their skill set. And when you have guys going from shooting 50% to 20%, 25% in the playoffs, something is brutally wrong.
I was at game two, I think it was Monday night, down at the Scotiabank Arena. And what I found, I don't know if disturbing or maybe just an observation, Butch, and you tell me your perception as, and you tell me yours. I just found that there was nobody on that Raptor team that particular night that was showing any emotion, any significant intensity. I won't go to lack of effort. I don't think it was a lack of effort. It was just like, you know, my NBA mind always takes me back to the great games in the 70s and the 80s and the Lakers and Celtics wars and the Knicks and the Lakers in the early 70s and Willis Reed coming out on one leg and Madison Square Garden going nuts and guys just picking it up and just, you know, diving after loose balls. It just looked like the Raptors were just, okay, we got the ball. Okay, what's the play? And they look like a team of, at certain times in the game, like robots. They're just, okay, here's the play. Let's execute it. The ball goes here. The ball goes there. And it's just like Philadelphia knew what was going to happen. Ness?
Well, it's really disturbing me because that wasn't the case during the season. They didn't play like that. They dominated Philly, and all of a sudden Philly's dominating them defensively, right? And it shouldn't be that way. The Raptors should be better defensively.
Do they play the game with enough emotion, Butch?
They play the game with enough emotion. They don't play the game with enough structure, all right? So when things are going bad, a coach needs to add more structure because you have to give them confidence that you can get them an open shot. They are not – they don't know where their shots are coming from. The Raptors' offense, when going bad, all right, is no more than what you would find on any playground, all right? The ball's going left, the ball's going right, and then someone's taken off to make a play, all right? The reality is –
they seem predictable.
It's very predictable because it's basically ISO Joe. It's ISO Joe left, ISO Joe right. There is no structure of double screen split. We need to get Serge Ibaka that 15-foot shot because if they were doing that and you told me that Serge Ibaka was make shooting 20% on that 15-foot shot, then I would say it's in Serge's head. But Serge doesn't know where his shots are coming from, all right? What they are doing – is basically been the downfall for the last 3 years in the playoffs. They hit a place where they struggle a little bit. They are very poor in using timeouts. They don't call their timeouts at the top of the key, which analytically would tell them you could bring the ball in on the strongest side for your team. They don't use consecutive timeouts. The only time I've seen Nick use consecutive timeouts was a game in Miami. Strategically, he did it. They came back and won a game in which they had started out very poorly. But they are not a team of structure when things are going bad. And that part of that is, this was the issue you took when you took a first-year head coach. First-year head coaches are going to bump their head. I don't care how good they are, because the other guys are older. They're better. Their depth of knowledge of what they need to do is there for them. Nick has no depth of knowledge.
But is Serge Ibaka better off starting than coming off the bench, because he had more success coming as a starter.
If he's going to perform like this, then I think I would start him. I would definitely would have been playing him and Gasol together, and then you could put him in what we call a stack, a random stack with Lowry coming off, one rolling and one popping. Like I said, there's at the end of the day, you should know how to get ahead in a game and keep piling it on, and that's consecutive runs. And you must know as a good coach how to stop another team's consecutive runs by your counters, right? And so, you know, you talk in hockey, your counterattack, right? Nick has not been able to show that he understands how to consistently counter when things are going bad.
We've got Butch Carter in studio this morning. Butch, the Raptors' bench is getting killed.
There isn't a bench left. They're all hurt.
But let's put it a different way. The non-starters are getting killed, and it's all the Raptors' starters are actually winning the series, and the Raptors' bench is costing them the series.
Right.
Your observations about that, and what can you do to change that?
Again, this all goes back to the guys who cover the game are all paid by the owners of the team. And so they give you this false sense all year. You know, the Raptors in the last 2 years have the best bench in the whole league.
What
right?
happened?
The reality is what happens, Siakam is not on the bench anymore. He becomes a starter. Van Fleet has been injured or ineffective, right? Even though McCall has tremendous speed, right, they don't go to a change of pace. They need a change of pace with the second unit so that guys can get some easier baskets. Right? You don't run a second unit and then say, you know, we're going to walk the ball up. You're in the second unit because you're not the best players. So you need some easy baskets. You need to have reliable plays and reliable shooters. But again, they're going out and they're playing this sandlot basketball, and guys don't know where they're going to get their shots from.
Let me ask this, both from your days as a coach and from your observations of this particular Raptors outfit. Kawhi Leonard's been on load management the entire year. That normally means he takes days off, and then, of course, that's not going to happen anymore from here on in. But his time is still being managed during the game. There was a critical part of Game 3. I think it was right at the end of the third quarter or the first 2.5 minutes of the fourth quarter. The Raptors had made a little bit of a run to get within what we call striking distance. Correct me if I'm wrong, at the beginning of the fourth quarter, Kawhi Leonard is watching from the bench, spent 2.5 minutes there. By the time those 2.5 minutes were gone, the game was over.
They were down 19.
Right. Listening to some observers this week, if I'm a coach and I'm going to lose, I'm going to lose with my stars. I'm not going to lose with my bench. At what point in time, and probably today, is Kawhi even capable of playing 42 minutes a game? And how much do you pin your bench to the bench on a go-forward basis?
He was pretty close to that in Game 2, though, Wally.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
But can we
move him to 45 minutes a game?
You cannot when you've got – if he's playing a second game in 3 days, in my opinion, clearly, yeah. I thought it's shown in the end of the first quarter where Kawhi is guarding.
So what did you think of the move pinning him to the bench right at the beginning as they were getting back in the game? But Nurse had no choice?
The choices are use your timeouts.
Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't use timeouts. Like
the issue is, you know, that's how you max it out. You use your timeouts. I mean, that's what you have to do, and you don't save them. The issue at the end of the day is guys who are saying they're saving their timeouts mean they have no real good end of game strategy, right? But they want to win he called timeout, right? But the reality is that if you save them during the game with timeouts, they're normally got enough juice to win the game, all right? Because they know they weren't supposed to, you know, have a chance to win the game. But, you know, my brother, who has a show in the U.S., we won't mention, but, you know, I get I get the text at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, what's going on? I said, the issue on load management with Kawhi is here's the first time we're going to see him twice, play twice in 3 days, and he's going to have to play 38, 40 minutes. And clearly in the first quarter, Kawhi can go to the offensive end at a pretty good pace, but he cannot sprint back on defense at the pace. And I told Chris, the benchmark for me is San Antonio versus Houston. Kawhi Leonard dominates James Harden on both ends, runs him down, block shot. He is not that kind of athlete. He is a Kawhi is a top six or seven player. But because he cannot dominate on the defensive end in the playoffs on games that are close, I really question, you know. But I told you, it's miraculous what he's doing. Whatever's wrong with him, it is absolutely miraculous that he's played this well.
What's really disturbing is that Greg Monroe looks like an all-star against the Raptors right now. And he didn't play a whit in the regular season.
Well, I told you guys. Drives me crazy. I told you guys. Greg Monroe can't play. Jody Meeks can't play.
You're saying that.
All right.
You know what? I was looking at this Monroe guy.
You know, oh, my God.
You know, we're talking about guys who play in Toronto. Just to digress just a second. I'm looking at the Toronto Sun this morning, and what do I see here? Roman Pollock playing 19 minutes a game for the Dallas Stars. But he's not good enough to play for the Toronto Leafs.
Is the other guy in the picture
Tyler Bozak? No, it's not Tyler Bozak.
St. Louis?
But, you know, these guys are not good enough to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But we got about 3 or 4 minutes before we go to break. Butch. We obviously we're trying to be constructive in our criticism. We're not trying to jump all over the Raptors. And I think, Butch, you've made some tremendously good technical points, and you've been fair in your criticism of what you've seen. What do the Raptors have to do to win today and turn the series around? Because I'm almost seeing this as perhaps, and I don't want to get too extensive in my hyperbola, this may be the most important game in Toronto Raptors history.
Yeah, it is from the standpoint of this five or six year run, right?
You know, because look, you know, if we don't have a breakthrough this year, Kawhi ain't going to be here next year.
Right.
There may be some other guys who aren't going to be here next year. So we may be starting, depending on who they sign in the free agent pool. But getting back, I see this as the most important game in Toronto Raptors history, other than that game seven.
Let's bring some levity to it, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, we hosted two games. We were not very good in the second game.
Yes.
Let's hope that Philly is not very good in their second game. They're overconfident. Little human nature comes in, and Jimmy Butler doesn't save them, because he is the one that's mean enough to try to save him, right? So let's hope that. The issue we have is Toronto is 0 for 10 or 0 for 11 in early afternoon games, right? So
that's not a good stat.
It's not a good stat. But
why? Tell it. I mean, you've found that stat. So let's make some sense out of it.
The NBA always plays an early afternoon game to get their games in on Sunday. They would normally like to see three games, right? So when we came here to Toronto, we put in a 1 o'clock game on Sunday, and it was to condition our guys to, and we were able to do it because we wanted to win that 1 o'clock game if we were home hosting the game. They moved it. This regime moved it to a 6 o'clock game, which I believe is a huge mistake because you're actually going against what you're going to see later on. And champions are best prepared mentally. It's not the physical, it's the mental part of what has to go on. So, but that being said, Philly could human nature wise, come in overconfident. And let's just say both teams shoot the ball poorly. All right. We just need to find a way to manage Kawhi and get Danny Green to make some shots, because I think there are really two guys that the team feeds off of outside of Kawhi. If Danny Green and Serge Ibaka are making shots, this team seems to be okay. And Danny hasn't made shots, hasn't had consistent shots, and Serge definitely hasn't.
It's tough to win if you don't make shots because it just it elevates everybody's emotion. It elevates their attitude. It just, you know, you get, it gives you a buzz if you're making shots.
Gives you that
dream. Marc Gasol's rebound number is so low, well, especially when he's so big.
Because Embiid is so far from the bucket. Right, it's not like he's moving from 8 feet to go rebound. Embiid could be at 21 feet, and someone else has to rebound the basketball because Embiid is either there shooting or he's there as a spacer because we know he can make shots. So Gasol's number, whoever's guarding Embiid, their numbers are going to be lower.
Anyways, we've had a thorough. We've analyzed the Raptors from every different perspective. All I can say is, obviously we're Raptors fans. We want to see them be successful. And, hopefully when we come in next Sunday morning, this will have just been a blip on the radar screen on the way to the NBA finals. So, we'll see what happens. We certainly hope they can turn it around. We've got to go to break and, we'll be right back after the break. We're going to talk some soccer with Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer Carmen Marcantonio.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when I realised that, unlike pizza, you can enjoy Pizzaville's authentic Panzerotti with just one hand. Pizzaville and its entities, owned in whole or in part, have no interest in knowing what you do with your other hand while you're consuming one of our Panzerotti. Seriously. Get two authentic Italian Panzerotti with cheese and sauce for just $10.49. One for each hand.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues, price and cost. Most prices are competitive, will likely save you money too, but the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the number 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. Welcoming back to our show this morning, we're going to talk a little bit soccer, as he likes to call it, football. Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer Carmen and Marcantonio. Good morning, Carmen, and how are you this morning?
To you and Naz, I'm very well, thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. We haven't chatted soccer for a while on the show, Carmen, so we want you to bring us a little bit up to date. The Toronto TFC victory last night in Orlando, 2-0 victory. They've got this great new exciting player that's, quite frankly, made me forget about Jovenko pretty quickly. Pozuelo has certainly had an impressive debut with TFC. Some world-class goals, seems to run all over the field, got tremendous vision and deft touch. Carmine, your impressions of Mr. Pozuelo?
Oh, definitely, Walt, you hit it right on the nail. He's definitely a good acquisition. Not so much to replace Jovinko, because they're two different type of players. He's more like a number 10, more of a playmaker. Jovinko is more of a forward. Obviously, it's very difficult to replace Jovinko in his goals, but with Pozuelo, they've compliments to TFC, to the, its president, Bill Manning, to have and his staff to have acquired this player, because it definitely makes the team a lot better in the construction of play. And he's shown it, especially the first few games. He's been ordinary. Yesterday I saw the game. Yesterday's win, I think it should be attributed more to the two Canadian players that are doing really, really well. Osorio scored an amazing goal, and Osorio is one of the top players, and we should be proud because he's Canadian. And also, Jay Chapman came in, number 14, and also scored. And so yesterday's win, really, it was a team win, because I thought the team played really well. But attributable to two good young Canadians are doing really well.
The Canadian players have done very, very well in the MLS. It's an important building block for them. Canada's team has improved quite a bit, Cameron.
Yeah, Nat, good morning to you.
Good
also.
Morning.
Yes, we're coming a long way because what's happening with the TFC and Vancouver and Montreal, with their academies, now all of a sudden we're seeing these players coming through the academy, and Chapman, Osorio, and there's a few, Akinora, Hamilton. These are all players now that are playing in the first team, and Osorio has become a star of TFC. He signed a new contract, I think, for like 4 years, making $500,000 plus. For Canadian, that's great. That's amazing. And over 10 years of academy and development, all of a sudden, the fruits are coming out, and you see more and more Canadians making it and playing regularly with the first team. And yesterday, as I said, I was very impressed with both of those two players. Akinora came in as a center forward, another young man that can play center forward because, as we know, Altidore has been injured, and he's also done very well. Not so much Hamilton, who started the game as a center forward. I think Hamilton still needs to work on his game. He's still not quite ready to be a starter. But overall, I think the Canadian teams are doing very well developing Canadian players, and that bodes well for the national team in the coming for the World Cup qualifying.
We're talking to Canadian Soccer Hall of Famer Carmen and Marc Antonio. Carmen, talking about development, there is a brand new professional league in Canada that has debuted, Canadian Premier League. There's a local team in the Greater Toronto Area called the York Nine. I believe they play out of the Pan Am Stadium at York University. Correct me if I'm wrong. Tell us about the new league and how that fits into the soccer landscape.
Yeah, Walter, that's correct. We have a local team, York Nine, that will be playing out of York University in the new brand new stadium. I think it's going under some restructuring, widening the playing pitch. As you know, it was quite small, making it a regular playing pitch for football. And so we're excited because, you know, this new league, again, because of the World Cup coming to Canada, the U.S. and Mexico, 2026, I believe.
That's correct.
And so FIFA mandated Canada to have a domestic league. And this is supposed to be the domestic league that will grow and will develop Canadian players. Hopefully, by 2026, we're going to be competitive. And I think we're on the right track. I was at the inaugural game in Hamilton against York Nine, and it was a good brand of football. Young Canadian players, as I said, a lot of them university and college students playing, you know, a lot of talent, and it's only going to get better. I think this is a place will develop, and it's going to help the Canadian team to achieve what we hope to be, you know, qualifying for the next World Cup, which is in Qatar. I think Qatar. I always
Qatar.
In the Arab state. I always get mixed up.
With all, that's, I think
somewhere
it's,
in
I think it's
in Asia,
yeah,
in
it's
Middle East. Qatar, I think.
I believe you're correct because there.
Yes.
There it's,
and then in 2026, hopefully, we're going to be ready to compete on the top stage because that's. The mandate of this new league is basically to get our kids, our national team, ready to be on the top level, top of their game by that time.
Carmen, I was flipping back from Liverpool and the FC yesterday, and I wanted to ask you a question because you played the game at a high level. How much time does it take to recover after a game? Because it seems to me like they play a lot of soccer in a week, and soccer players run the most out of any sport, they endure a lot. What does it take to recover?
Well, yeah, that normally you need at least those 2-3 days, and that's why a lot of the rosters in Europe now, and even in the MLS, are 24-25 players, and all at the top level, all top players, because when you play twice in a week, and sometimes very rare, but it could be also 3 games in a week, you're going to want to rotate the starting 11. And that's why you need a large roster. But I think at that level, you know, players are so fit that that they're easily able to handle 2 games in a week. And you're right, Liverpool, after the game they played against Barcelona, and, you know, nonstop for 90 minutes. I mean, that was the beautiful game played at the highest of levels. I don't know if you guys saw that Champions League game in
absolutely.
Barcelona, but I thought really the difference
was Messi.
Was Messi, you know, with that amazing goal free kick, and it was like a slingshot.
Yeah.
I mean, the ball just took off his foot and at the top corner. Only Messi could do that. He's from another planet. As far as I'm concerned, he's one of the greatest with Pelé. Maradona is going to go in history as one of the greatest players in the game, history of the game, for sure.
We're talking to Carmen Marcantonio. Carmen, we're, as usual, at this time of the show, running a little bit tight on time. And before we let you go, I got to ask you this question, because you know that we have the same passion, which is our beloved Azzurri, the Italian national soccer team. I'm still in therapy over Italy not making the World Cup. So tell me, give me some bright news on what's happening on the Italian national team front.
Both well with the new manager, Mancini. I think he's going with a lot of young talent. One of them is Kane from Juventus, the center forward, that has done really well. And he's already scored a couple of goals for the national team. And, you know, Bernardeschi, another Juventus player that is also showing well as a number 10. So there's a lot of new talent, and I feel very confident that the Azzurri will be on top of their game again come the European qualifying, and then eventually for the World Cup. For that time, I hope the team will gel, because that's what Mancini is hoping for, to work around about 30 players, nucleus of the young talent that's coming up in Serie A, and blend them together. Because to become a team, Walter, I don't have to tell you, you need a good manager to make them play as a team. And it's very difficult, to be honest with you, with the national team, because managers have these players only for a few sessions during the year. And to blend them and play as a unit, it takes time. So I think the more games they play together, the better they're going to be and the more competitive they're going to be. So hopefully we're going to see another World Cup winners, in the next one in Qatar. We could be maybe going down to St. Clair or maybe celebrate up in Woodbridge.
I'd love to do that.
Change venue this time.
Yeah. Oh, we'll figure it out. I did St. Clair in 82. I did Woodbridge in 06. So 2022, we'll do both. Anyways, what I'd really love to see in 2026 is Italy playing Canada in a game. That would be incredible. I'll bring my Italian flag and I'll bring my Canadian flag as well. And I'll have a difficult time figuring out who I would cheer for in that game. But that would be
amazing.
That would be absolutely amazing for Canadian soccer. Kadmin, on that note, we really appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much. Let's stay in touch, and hopefully TFC keeps this drive going because they've gotten off to a good start. Have a fantastic week, Kadmin.
You too, Naz and Walter, anytime. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Kadmin. Kadmin and Marc Antonio. Gentlemen, we've got Butch Carter, Naz. We've got Butch in the studio this morning. I know there's a topic dear to both of your hearts that we haven't had a chance to really talk about too much. So we got 5 minutes. Let's go Jays. Naz, you're wearing your Jays cap this morning. Of course, the story the entire spring has been the arrival of the Messiah, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the most heralded rookie ever to don a Blue Jays uniform. To be quite frank, and I'm not going to get excited here, it's only been a week and a bit, but Vladdy Jr., I guess, he hasn't been belting the ball out of the park in the first week, but I'm not going to be critical of him at this stage. But your observations, Ness.
Well, he's starting off slow, but Mike Trout started off slow too, and so did Bregman from Houston. So it happens, and he'll be fine.
Butch, we always get an opportunity to look at these perspectives from the perspective of a professional coach, and you've gone through baseball's a different sport, but sports is sports, and young men are young men, and talents are talents. Doesn't matter what sport you play, and when you've got this generational talent that comes into your fold, and he's 20 years old, as a coach, what do you think about
physically? They've made a mistake.
Okay.
I would have left him in the minors until he showed that he was willing to lose the weight. They are confirming that he can stay in.
Do you think he's overweight, or that's just he's just another Cecil Fielder? That's just his body type. Okay,
that's.
I don't know. You tell me.
My thought process. And okay, then how old is he?
20. He's 20.
20 years
20,
old.
Is he 20?
20
just
old?
Turned 20, I believe.
So 20 years old, and he can't drop 30 pounds. Right. The reality is,
I don't disagree with you.
How are you going to play 162 games carrying that weight and not have knee problems? He's going to torque something. I mean, the biggest problem with baseball.
Well, then I'll ask this question, Naz. You may know better than I. The Vladdy Jr. that we see here today, I don't know what he weighs, 240, 250, 260?
They say he weighs 250.
What was he at 15 or 16? What was he at 15 or 16?
Well, he's probably 190, 195.
You see him dropping 30 pounds. So I'm sure
the issue is you put a structure in place so that he can. All right. The reality is baseball's problems for athletes is it's such a stop and start sport. Right. You never know when you're going to have to sprint. Right. If it's a single, double, or triple. Right. You never.
What's he like running down bunts? He's got a head down that third baseline.
He moves pretty good for a big guy.
Is he okay?
Now, yeah. His baseball IQ is off the chart.
Yeah.
Right? But Ken Griffey was a gazelle.
Well, that's different.
Right?
Yeah.
He wasn't a hippo. Right?
Okay.
I mean, when you look at him anatomically, all right, so he definitely can't put on 20 more pounds. Right? That would be going in the wrong direction.
That would be going in the wrong direction.
Why would he have his grandma cook for him?
Why?
But that's
because the food's probably good, Naz.
But,
okay.
But that's what I'm saying.
Wouldn't you want your grandma to cook for you?
That's
exactly.
What I'm saying. If they bought him here and said, "Hey, you cannot let them stay in the same mental state that they were in," because the game and a professionalism requires them to reach a higher state. Okay, his baseball's IQ is
off the charts.
Yeah, his mind is going to say, yo, I got that, I got that. And his body's eventually going to say.
But it's not Butch, it's not his body type that only got him one RBI the first week of the season. It's not his bat yet. He's just off to a slow start.
Okay, but I don't.
You're suggesting leave him down in AAA until he loses 30 pounds?
Is I don't care about his bat.
Okay,
because if he's a 10 or 15 year guy for your franchise, the most important thing is his availability. All right, and the better conditioning he gets in, the more available he will be. All right, I
got to be honest with you. I hate to say this, but I agree with you 100%.
I would pay money to see Mike Trout play anywhere.
Yeah.
He is a monster, right? Yeah. But he looks like when Mike Trout would take his shirt off, right?
That's not Vladdy. But you know what? I the first time I saw Vladdy Jr., I said, you know what? I don't get it. He's a teenager, and he appears to be overweight. He appears to be, you know. But Naz, last word. We've got to go.
Well, hopefully we're talking about a Game 7 win for the Raptors, but I'm not so sure.
Can we still win it in 6?
We can.
Okay, yeah. So hopefully a Game 6 win. Butch, give us your call real quick.
The Raptors need to win. They need to win today. That's the most important thing, and then I'll take whatever comes after that.
Butch, thanks for joining us. Yep. It's been another great week on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. To everyone, have a great and healthy week. We'll be back again next Sunday morning.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.